Our second case this morning is number 19-1073, In Re Forney Industries, Inc. Mr. Cochran, all right. Go ahead.
Well, good morning. Thank you for hearing this case. I would like to tell you that the issue in this case is very simple. We don't have any milligrams involved in this case. The issue in this case is whether applicant's mark presents a pattern designed or shape that is distinctive, and whether the colors alone...
Inherently distinctive, right?
Excuse me.
Inherently distinctive, right?
But even under your theory, it seems to me that the specimens of the mark don't correspond to the mark itself. You seem to be trying to get a mark which includes any shading from one color to another, as opposed to the specifics of the mark that was presented because of this inconsistency between the specimens and the mark.
Well, the specimens are presented to the trademark office to show use of the mark in commerce.
Right, but we need consistent use. You need the use to be consistent.
Well, not necessarily, because as long as we have specimens that do correspond to the mark, then those specimens are qualified as usage of the mark. We've got certainly,
but the specimens are suggesting that the mark doesn't require a fixed design. That it suggests that the mark that's being sought is based, in fact, on the use of particular colors without specifying a fixed proportion of those colors in the design.
Now, what we're applying for is this mark. What
page is
the for registration?
Yeah.
Is this not mark?
A30, right? That's your...
Appendix 30.
Right.
And this is different from the 10th Circuit case, because we're seeking registration of this mark.
I understand, but to follow up on Judge Dyke's question, if you just look at the specimen at A32, for example, I don't know if that's some circular saw blade or something like that, but with the packaging, the amount of red in that packaging is not the same as the amount of red, relatively speaking, in your A30 proposed mark.
Well, these pictures are not, they can be deceiving.
And so the concern, I guess.
That's the problem.
The concern here, or there's multiple concerns here, but one concern here is when your specimens show a variance in the scheme of your design to the point where whatever color pattern you're trying to get a registration on doesn't line up with the actual color scheme in your specimens.
Right. Well, this was not an issue that was raised by the examiner. If they had a problem with the specimens...
Well, there is in the first footnote to the board decision, there is a reference to the specimen problem.
Well, it should have been raised by the examiner, and we should have had an opportunity to submit specimens.
They say if this got reversed, that you'd have to submit new specimens, as I understand what they're saying.
And we're glad to do that. We're glad to submit new specimens.
It's footnote 3, actually, on
page 1. Specimens that actually were in use at the time we filed this application. This has been used for...
Obviously, the main event is really trying to understand the meaning of Qualitex and...
Right.
As well as Walmart and maybe 2 pesos as well. But if I can just keep going on this proposed mark, what we have here is this kind of abstraction of colors that are disembodied from any particular tangible thing. Is it your view that your mark is for any kind of packaging from this company, Forney Industries, regardless of shape or anything?
Well, it's used on backer cards. It's used on labels.
I'm trying to understand your conception of what is the scope of your application and what kind of protection you're seeking. Are you seeking anything and everything that will have this color scheme on it, or are you being more specific about it in terms of it's just going to be on package backing cards, and maybe even more specifically than that, square or rectangular shaped package backing cards? Or is it, going back to my original question, everything and anything that you might be able to put this color scheme on?
The description in the trademark application says that it's on backer cards or labels. And that's what we're seeking protection in this trademark application.
Suppose if you look at the design, it's an O at page 2 of the appendix. Suppose the black were twice as large as it is in that figure. Would that be covered by the mark?
That's an issue for infringement.
There's a likelihood of confusion.
There would be a likelihood of confusion.
But it wouldn't be literally within the mark if the black were twice as big.
No, it wouldn't be literally within the mark. That's the mark that's shown. We're applying for that mark that's shown in Appendix 2.
And the depiction, the visual depiction of the mark governs rather than the verbal description of it, right?
Yes. But they're both, they both are important in actually what we're applying. I mean, you have to look at this in terms of the fact that...
Well, what role does the verbal description play? Because the verbal description... It is really broad. It consists of colors red into yellow and a black banner located near the top.
Correct. Well, that's an attempt to try to verbally describe what the mark is, which we're trying to get protection.
Yeah, but it's a description that's incredibly broad and makes it sound as though any combination of colors like this, no matter what the proportionality is, would be covered by the mark, which I think would be problematic. That sounds like trying to trademark the colors as opposed to trademarking a particular design.
That's a 43A common law issue that was raised by the 10th Circuit. We're not applying for the description. Applying for what is shown in the drawing.
Okay.
And what's shown in the drawing is this particular set of colors. Now, if there's...
In the proportion that they're shown in the figure.
Exactly.
Is there anything in the 10th Circuit Forney opinion that you disagree with? Or do you essentially agree with it? Because I think my understanding of part of your argument is that at least for purposes of this mark, as depicted in your trademark application, it fulfills whatever requirements that the Tenth Circuit was contemplating in terms of a specific shape, pattern, or design.
That is what we are arguing.
So that's why I'm just trying to figure out, is there anything in the opinion, though, that you disagree with? Because obviously there they found that there was no inherently distinctive mark there.
That case was decided on the fact that there was not a precise verbal description of the mark. And the mark as it was described, could cover a number of different things. And they said it was too amorphous. And
right, is there anything you disagree with in the Tenth Circuit opinion?
Well, they say, well, the fine shape pattern or its distinctive design.
But they don't say that this mark that we're dealing with now lacks specific design.
They did not. Yeah, that's correct. They did not say that. Restatement third, unfair competition, is also clear. It says color can be protected as an element of a trademark when used as part of a design pattern or a combination of colors that as a whole
is
inherently distinctive.
Which opinion is this that you just quoted?
Restatement.
That's the restatement.
That's the restatement. Okay.
And I think we fall into that. This is a geometric design. It is a gradient that moves from red to yellow.
What if your mark was just red and white, period? Half red, half white. Left-hand side is red, right-hand side is white.
Well, then...
Would you say that that is a, I don't know, a specific concrete design, shape, or pattern that needs to now be evaluated under inherent distinctiveness?
Well, you see, that's a judgment call, and that's why we're here.
Well, I'm trying to get your views. I'm trying to get your thoughts on this. I'm trying to figure out how far you really want the law to go in demanding color marks to be considered under inherent distinctiveness.
I think you have to look at it, and you say, is this inherently distinctive? If you were to take...
Okay, so in your view, something as simple as two colors like that, half white, half red... half white, half black. That's now it's like, okay, trademark office, get to work. Go figure out if that's inherently distinctive.
No, I don't think it is.
Okay, so then.
Now, if you were to swirl those in a particular way, or if you were to create like they do, you know, on a coffee, and you have a particular design of those two colors, yes, I think that could be inherently distinctive.
Okay, you want to save your rebuttal time there?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Walker?
Good morning. Please support.
See, I'm having trouble seeing why this visual depiction of the mark isn't a specific design that would be subject to trademark. I mean, I agree that there's a disconnect between the visual depiction here and the specimens. That's a problem because it might suggest that the mark goes beyond the specific depiction here. But why, you know, this seems to be unusual. It seems to be distinctive with this proportionate black bar and then yellow and then shading into orange. And if it's done in this particular way, why isn't that subject to trademark?
Yes, Your Honor. And I think that Judge Chen's example of the red and white combination is a good starting point for that principle.
Well, let's start with the actual design here.
Well, so...
But I don't think the fact that this design would be... subject to trademark means that the red and white necessarily would be subject to trademark. I don't think the point is that any depiction of more than one color in a design becomes inherently distinctive. But this, if you look at this one, this does look distinctive.
Well, I think the question, though, is what is motivating the rationales in both Walmart and Qualitex? And I was referring to the example that Judge Chen gave to then look at two specific examples in the record here for that motivation, the underlying motivation. So I think both APPX 36, which is an example of the use of the mark here as a specimen, shows sort of the black at the top, and then something that consumers would perceive as nothing more than color, right? It's a gradient of color, but really when they're seeing seeing it on the shelf, they're going to just see it as nothing more than two sections.
What page is this at?
This is 36. And this is one of the specimens that the board included in this decision. And then there's another example, which is sort of a zoomed out version of the same thing, which is that Appendix 70. And again, this is what 20 claims have used since 2007. What consumers are going to perceive is no different than this two sections.
I think your argument seems to assume that we're trying to figure out right now whether this particular mark with these particular specimens could be considered inherently distinctive. But we have a more fundamental question that the board answered, which is that as a matter of law, there's no way that any proposed mark that's just relying on multiple colors could ever be subject to protection as inherently distinctive. And so that's really the question here. Not so much, I mean, we could pick apart these specimens if we wanted to, but now the question is, why couldn't some very unique, unusual pattern of colors, you know, where the colors are individually in different shapes and in all relation to each other, then create some kind of very unique standout design, why couldn't that serve as indicating source?
Yes.
Just like any other unique, interesting, inherently distinctive trade dress.
Yes, Your Honor. And I want to be clear that there's several different inquiries in the question that you just stated. There's the threshold question of, can there be protection, right? And so there's no question here that colors, whether a single color or multiple colors, can serve as a trademark.
Then I'm talking about inherent distinctiveness.
Right, and then the question is, right, but I just want to be clear that there's, at that sort of threshold level, then there's a question of whether, as the board articulated here, that color marks, whether it's a single color or a combination of colors, are of the nature that could be inherently distinctive. But the board did articulate a test, a more simple test than the Seabrook test, which would be the alternative, which is a question of whether the colors are in a distinct pattern or design. So if there is a distinct pattern or design, and I understood Judge Dyke's question to go into that point, is there a distinct design here? Once you get to the point of is there a distinct design, then the next inquiry would be analysis under the Seabrook test. The board properly didn't do that Seabrook analysis here because it looked at Walmart and Politex, and it found that this was the type of mark where that type of multi-factor analysis would be inappropriate. But there are.
And as I understand the board's decision, rationale is it included it's unnecessary to go to Seabrook because this is a multicolor mark.
That's right, Your Honor, because it found that it didn't include a distinct pattern.
And so what I'm trying to understand from your point of view is, can there ever be multiple colors and only multiple colors that can have a pattern or design?
Well, I think there has to be a distinct element to it. And so certainly Letica is an example where...
Why isn't this a distinct pattern where you have various colors and shades of colors in a particular proportion? So suppose this mark had been rotated 45 degrees. Would that be a specific design? Is the problem is that it starts with a bar of colors at the top and then works down? Suppose it were rotated 45 degrees.
I'm not sure that would make a difference. And I will say here, the board analysis of whether this included a distinct pattern of design is on APPX 7 through 9. And one of the things that the board was looking at was how consumers would perceive this. And the fact that this is located on a backer card, and we know that from the mark description, and it serves as a background carrier for other elements on the packaging, indicated to the board that this is of the nature that consumers aren't going to perceive it on day one. Whether other designs might, or whether other color schemes might include a particular distinct design, is a factual question that would be decided on a case-by-case basis. The But the board will hear.
I'm a little confused. Are you saying that maybe there could have been a different, more complex, more unusual color scheme other than the one that's provided at A30 that the board would have then found, oh, okay, this what we have here is something that should be considered for inherent distinctiveness?
Yeah, both the Tenth Circuit and the board said that the analysis is whether there's a distinct pattern or not. And the board found here that there wasn't a distinct pattern.
Well, it wasn't clear to me if that was because it expected that the color scheme here had to be confined to a particular shape. Maybe like a diamond shape of this particular color scheme that's printed on the product packaging somewhere, almost like a logo. And then in that sense, the board would feel comfortable with that. But otherwise, it would seem like this board decision rests on the premise that no color scheme, no matter how interesting or unusual, for package backing cards would be good enough.
So the board's decision did not rest on the fact that the outline, that there was a distinct peripheral shape of the mark, right? That would be a separate inquiry. And we know that too, because the Patent and Trademark Office uses CBRL in analyzing repeating pattern marks. So there is a separate analysis for repeating pattern marks. So if you are in a situation where you have a distinct pattern of design, that is a situation where it's not simply a color mark. So we're not suggesting that any distinct design would necessarily fall into multiple color patterns.
This is not a distinct design because it's rectangular, is that the idea?
No, it's because there's nothing that defines clearly the nature of the combination of colors here. You have a gradient that goes from red to yellow, and that is not something that consumers would see as a distinct pattern. It's something, as I was explaining earlier, that really is akin to a single color. If you start to get
We've got black, we've got yellow, we've got red, and then we have a gradient between the yellow and red band that, you know, obviously moves from yellow to red, so it's kind of orangey and pixelated. So now we're dealing with three colors plus a gradient. So why can't that potentially be enough?
Well, I guess the question is enough for what, right? I mean, what the board found...
Enough to be considered a legitimate pattern or design such that now, like all other pattern or design trade dress marks that are applied for, you've got to evaluate it under inherent distinctiveness.
Well, I mean, again, and all I can do is point to the board's decision. The board considered that and found that it didn't.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at A10, and at the bottom of A10 it says, we find that a color mark consisting of multiple colors applied to product packaging is not capable of being inherently distinctive. So that feels pretty cut and dried that the agency has taken a position that anything that rests on multiple colors applied to product packaging is no good, regardless of how interesting, unique, unusual, striking the particular pattern or design of those colors may be.
But again, it's about whether the design was distinctive, and the board was clear that it was defining what a multiple color mark was as one that didn't include a distinct pattern or design.
Well, why isn't this a distinctive pattern or design?
It has
a particular proportion between the black at the top and then the other color shade. What's not distinctive about that?
The impression that consumers get from this is one that is the same as a single color. And if this mark has a distinct color pattern or design, then it's hard to see why the red and yellow, the red and white combination also wouldn't, right? That really what you're saying is that there are no multiple color marks that wouldn't include the same pattern design, because as soon as you put two colors together, you're necessarily going to have some type of design. And the question is whether there's a particular distinct pattern or design that's one that consumers would view as different from color.
I guess even if I were to agree that the board somehow implicitly thought that there was a problem with the lack of a pattern or design here. It didn't ever actually articulate why walking through this particular picture, this particular depiction, why this is somehow too plain, ordinary, basic, common, whatever words you want to use, such that black, yellow, orange, gradient, red is no good for it, particularly in this order, in this particular proportion. I don't see any kind of analysis like that. What I see is a straightforward view that Qualitex tells us that color marks are no good, and this is a color mark because it's got multiple colors.
I mean, the board at APPX5 says the applicant has not attempted to combine its color mark with a uniform shape pattern or other distinctive design. And then it says that they use varying degrees of fading of red into yellow without any other distinctive design. I mean, other than observing that, I'm not sure what else the board could do. Because, and then the board references the particular examples in the record.
I might agree with you that there is variance between the depicted mark and then what is shown to us in the specimens. But, I mean, that's a different question than whether color marks that have a particular design can ever be considered for inherent distinctiveness, and then just exactly where was the analysis from this board that would suggest that explaining why this particular proposed design is not really a sufficient design to even be considered under the Seabrook factors.
If the question is whether or not the board sufficiently defined what is distinctive design or uniform design, that's something that this court could remand with instructions on what the definition of those terms are, or could remand for further explanation. I would caution again, though, that if this design, if this colors being here is when the court finds that the board didn't have substantial evidence to support its finding that there isn't a distinctive design here, it's hard to imagine what color scheme would fail.
Okay, so hypothetically, if this mark had, I don't know, 15 colors and all kinds of stripes and squares and circles of colors, and you're saying, okay, that one would be good enough to be considered for inherent distinctiveness?
That certainly seems like the type of example where we would find a distinctive pattern of design and then we move on to the Seabrook analysis.
And the problem is that it's bars in a rectangular design?
Well, it's the gradient, I think, that there's not a definition here that's something that consumers would see as something really other than a single color. Right, or color, right? That the impression is color, but it's not of a design.
So, just so I understand, the agency believes a mark with multiple colors could potentially be considered inherently distinctive and would need to be examined for inherent distinctiveness, just not this particular one.
If the test that they're more articulated is combined with a distinct pattern, then yes, that would be the type.
Well, suppose it were circular instead of rectangular.
Well, the question here, though, is when it's applied to a backer card. So if it had a circular shape that was defined, then we're not talking about a color mark. We're actually talking about a shape. So here, what we're talking about is something that's applied to a full surface. And we know that because there isn't, that we have the dotted line on the outside. And so again, we're only talking about full surface marks. As soon as you have a defined peripheral shape, that's a separate.
Okay, but a pattern across the full, you know, swath of packaging, that could be considered for inherent distinctiveness.
And that is now considered. And this decision does not disturb that practice of the patent trademark office. That is considered under Seabrook. So
even if it's just colors.
As long as it's
the pattern comprises colors.
Pattern comprises colors, and repeating patterns are specific shapes in a pattern.
Okay.
If the court has no further questions, I'd ask that you affirm. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Walker.
Oh, just to confirm, you would think if we say this needs to be understood, this needs to be reviewed for inherent distinctiveness, it's the Seabrook factors we would use.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cochran.
Well, we agree that Seabrook factors are the factors that should be used. And under the Seabrook factors, you look at things like, is this a common type of shape or pattern? Is it common in this particular industry or set of goods that are being sold? And, you know, I don't have to go through the Seabrook.
Right. The agency is saying that there needs to be a step zero even before we get to the Seabrook factors. And that step zero is, do we even have a pattern mark here?
Right. And what they did was they hide behind this term color mark, and which means that the mark only has colors and it doesn't have anything else. And then they say colors alone cannot be inherently distinctive. And
that's because it's rectangular?
The outer shape is rectangular.
Yeah.
They had an objection to, you know, the fact that we put dots around it, and it could be rectangular, circular, oval, whatever, you know, fit the backer card or label. Yes, they had a problem with that. I'll give you an example. You know,
what does the dotted line mean, that it can be any shape?
Well, any shape of any backer card or label.
It doesn't have to be rectangular.
No, not the way we apply it for this, because we put the dots around the mark, the drawing.
So it's just packing backer cards that you're applying for? Not any and all kinds of packaging? I ask because the first sentence of your... that the description of the mark is, the mark consists of the colors red into yellow with a black banner located near the top as applied to packaging for the goods, period. Then it goes on, the dotted lines merely depict placement of the mark on the packing backer card. And so one way to read those two sentences is, packing backer card is an example of the packaging you're trying to get protection for, and you're trying to get protection for any and all packaging with this color scheme, or you're applying just for the types of packaging that are known as packing backer cards. Which one is it?
The latter. It says the dotted line is merely the pick placement of the mark on the packer backing cards. That's what we're applying for.
And you have packer backing cards that are various shapes, right? Circles, right. Rectangles.
Some are square, some are rectangular.
At least one is circular.
They have 150 products that are sold. They've sold $500 million of product, with these types of backer cards.
Do you know what the reason is for this particular color scheme they came up with? I ask because this is welding. This is welding equipment we're talking about in large part, and I don't know. Maybe this looks like a heat gradient in a way.
The issue of functionality was never raised.
I'm not asking about functionality.
And let me tell you that in welding, the flames are blue, not red.
I think on that note, we're out of time. Thank you. Thank both counsel. The case is submitted.